Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to thank those who are taking the time to pray. And if you're interested in joining a prayer circle or starting one, just let me know. And we can, you know, people that are in your area or what have you. I mean, technically, because most of this stuff can be done virtually, you can have kind of a broad reach. But anyway, what is more important is that that debt is fraud. And as a matter of fact, one of the things we need to dive into as a part of this is what's in play right now. And we can actually see this happening, how the UN is trying to push America into becoming more of a participant in acting and allowing their laws to be enacted and supported here in America. There is probably not a more important petition that you need to understand and get out there and get people signing it is petition two, because our federal government has no ability to adjoin to, constitutionally, legitimately, adjoin to this. This is all fraud. This is the same thing as the fraud in that debt. So, China and the UN and globalists are really working to replace the UN. And as our cookie continues to crumble, these pernicious players, when and if they succeed in stealing our wealth, land, and our liberty, we will rue the day. And those of you, so let's play the scenario, because there's some of those folks out there that have gone down this autonomy. In other words, they aren't protected by the Constitution or anything else. And even though the Constitution is going to go away, you've been identified. In other words, you've put yourself on the, you know, well, they have these do not fly list, right? Well, you're basically putting yourself on as an enemy of the globalists. And so there's a lot of risks in what we're doing, and there are consequences with the decisions we make. Now, again, I do understand, and I've said this many times, that there are people that are in such dire straits that they're being destroyed by the tyranny of the government that they have no other choice but to basically secede from the citizenship and secede from the union and just become an inhabitant. Yeah, you can do that. But more importantly, we need every citizen, all hands on deck. We need everybody engaged in this movement, because we will not succeed. And as a matter of fact, this kind of leads me into this next point, because we the people, really have the blood on our hands. As a matter of fact, we the people, you know, when you kind of understand the context of this whole being a righteous nation or being righteous people or a nation that is worthy of being blessed, let's put the judgmental part of it, or what would be kind of, I guess, subjective, being good or bad. But the point is that when we are not doing good, in other words, when we're not being unified, in other words, if we're not being harmonious, forgiving, and those types of things, the more people do evil in America, the less blessings America will get. And when the people allow their government to do evil things, then it, moves us further down or further away from the opportunities of being blessed. Now, I've said this and I've said this. I've asked people to, step out in faith. Do things because it's the right thing to do. And you know that this needs to be done. And watch what happens. Be bold. Say those things that need to be said. And watch what happens. Because I believe when people hear the truth, it really does have a positive impact. We can't just plan, you know, we can't just think that there's no good people out there, that we just got to throw all the babies out with the bathwater. I believe the Spirit will actually perform miracles. I believe He will perform miracles. So why would we cast out any opportunity by just saying we're done with all of them? You know, it's almost the same thing as being secession or a secessionist, because you're just basically bailing out and saying, I'm divorcing myself from this. We're no longer a part of this family. We're no longer a part of this union. So it actually came in the conversation this weekend regarding what would I do if I had the ability to reach out. Let's just say I'm a politician. Let's say you're running for office and you're going to be in a meeting with a lot of leaders who at this point in time, you really need their help. But you do realize that if you ask for their help, they're less likely to help you. Now, there's people that, you know, you can sell them on the idea that this is why you need to help me. And that kind of helps a little bit. But nine times out of 10, if they haven't helped you already at this point in the game, because tomorrow's October. So if you're not getting that help out of the past few months that you're running your campaign, then what's the likelihood that now they would be compelled? So what you really need to do is just put off, you know, your needs and put off your being nice and trying to get people behind you and actually stake a stand on principle. And so the scenario came up where a person was going to probably have 5, maybe 10 minutes to get up and say something to people that would have the ability to write a big check for a person's campaign. And I said, well, I think the best thing you could do is basically say, you know, I'm not here asking for your money. I do not want you to support me. Because at this point in time, regardless of what we do now, unless we all start uniting, we're done. Look at the empirical data. Look at how over the past few decades, we, especially in the state of Washington, have lost. I mean, we've never taken back our election system, and it seems like it's even further away from us now than ever. As we look at the progressives and the fact that the autonomous zone and the non-enforcement, I mean, the stupid, unconstitutional rule of law and the tyranny, the loss of rule of law and the tyranny that has actually been coming from Olympia and throughout this state in these bastions of progressivism, we're not doing it. We're failing. And it has everything to do with the fact that we're not uniting. Everybody here in this room or in this meeting, whatever the scenario is, whatever that environment is, everybody has their share of blood on their hands, because the definition of insanity is continuing to do the same things without getting different results. Even though we may respond and we may put a good spin on a bad law, that law probably never should have come forth in the first place. And bottom line, because, you know, I've only got 5-10 minutes, bottom line, if we're not open and objective and we can't be honest with ourselves that we do not have what it takes to kill our enemy, to stop our enemy. I don't care how bold you want to get, kill, stop, whatever you think is best. But you need to put it out there that we should be in a position, because we have the truth on our side. We've got the law on our side. And the further we go down this path, the more we divorce ourselves from the truth and the law. And we play their game. And you know what? As long as we're playing their game, we will never win. What we have to do is we have to get the people on our side. The problem is the party is equally a part of the problem, because everybody at this point in time is just blindly following the party operatives to go, don't worry about the man behind the curtain. Just do, you know, just keep on voting for the party. Keep on voting for the Republicans. And that right there is the problem. We actually have to take back the Republican Party. We have to start demanding that everybody be held accountable to the Constitution, because I'm telling you right now, the Constitution is the solution. As what do you want to call that? As trite or as novice or as rudimentary or even juvenile that may sound, this Constitution is the solution. It is. It's just like the Word of God for Martin Luther was the solution. And what we need is we need a Martin Luther moment in every state, in every county, in every community. If we create that Martin Luther moment where we're actually taking a stand on the truth, and when in regards to government, we're not bringing the Bible to the table, we're bringing the Constitution. That's the only thing that belongs in the public arena. We already know that you can't have religious tests. Because why? He knew. There's no doubt in my mind the divine hand of providence understood how godless we would become and how we would be basically excoriated. We would be castigated. We will be everything aided if we try to go down that path. I keep on saying that every time you step out and try to fight the battle on morality, because there's no allowance in the Constitution over what is moral, what isn't moral. It is black and white. It is the law. Do they have the authority to do it? It doesn't matter how immoral what they're doing is, you know, a part of that. That doesn't matter. What matters is they don't have the authority to do it. And that's what stops them. You know, you tell them, oh, this is evil, this is immoral. And they just smile. Yeah, it kind of is, isn't it? And you haven't won the argument because you haven't called them out that they don't have the authority. So when we actually take a position on the truth, we actually have to make sure that we're footed. I mean, we're standing on that rock. When we say, if that's not in our Constitution, you need to go through that Constitution and find out, is energy in your state Constitution? If it's not, because we know it's not in the federal Constitution. Most states have not done the due diligence when they have accepted these policies, these laws, these regulations, and this tyranny from the federal government because it came with money. They just started doing it. Oh, well, if the government wants us to do it, if the federal government wants us to do it, it must be constitutional. So, now that I've kind of covered that 5-10 minutes, that's how you have to go at them. You have to basically hit them below the knees. You have to drop them to the floor. We need to literally give people the truth so that everybody can then stand back and say, you know what, I cannot refute this. What you're speaking is true. Because when you're bold and you're standing on the truth, it's hard for somebody to get an edge or any leverage on you. There's no fulcrum available. You give them the fulcrum by, you know, making concessions, by compromising. Those are the fulcrums, how they move and remove you. Anyway, so one of the things I need to do and what I want to do, because we didn't get a chance to finish this, is because I was diving into the cultural engineering that under the Cloward-Piven plan that was basically presented a long time ago. And so before I can do that, before I actually get into this cultural warfare that they've been playing, this cultural engineering that they've been playing, because it literally is cultural warfare, but I want to place more context to this, because when I say cultural warfare, that's only one form of warfare. I sent an email out in 2023, January 23rd, 2023. And in that email, I identified all of the different aspects of warfare that our government, the federal government, is waging against the states and we, the people. And so let me just kind of do the summary, and we'll wrap up with cultural warfare last, so that then I can take it back into and kind of summarize and close out how cultural warfare is literally taking us, it's dragging us, it's almost like it's a vacuum sucking us down into this abyss. The first different, or the first form of warfare, because when I say warfare, most people think combatants with, you know, armor, you know, guns and deadly force and military troops and so forth. When I say that, when I'm speaking warfare, I'm not speaking that. There are multiple types of warfare. And so there's, you know, standard combatant warfare. But now we want to talk about the different types of warfare that have been used as tools to invoke or to keep basically people in fear, or to basically take are a measure of using these warfare tactics for control. So the first one is rebellions. Not alphabetical. I'm just basically running through in this list. Rebellions is the first warfare. Well, who's running these rebellions? Anarchal protests in the street and the government telling you that you can do this. Oh, hold on here, though. Here is the hypocrisy. I can tell you already, we do not have a right to protest. But they've convinced you that you do, but only certain protests are now acceptable. Because if you protest to hold government accountable, if you actually try to exercise out in the streets, you know, a call for, you know, stopping the election like in January 6, 2020, oh, well, then that's an insurrection. But when you're burning the streets down, hurting people, you know, actual property damage and so forth, that's okay. It's a little rambunctious, but, you know, that's okay. Keep them burning. Folks, good is evil and evil is good. And so rebellions now have really taken on a new form. Because before, you know, we kind of tolerated the Selma, you know, protest with Glenn Beck. Or the, you know, the September 12th protest with Glenn Beck. Some of these, you know, I'm just giving you some conservative protests. But now we're at a point where they won't tolerate our protests anymore. And as a matter of fact, they're basically saying, well, you don't have that right. Well, the one right you do have, folks, is you do have the right of petition. That is right there ingrained in the Constitution. Not protests. The word protest does not exist. As a matter of fact, the framers were very adamant that that type of behavior, uncivil behavior, civil disobedience is unacceptable, because every state, every municipality has these laws that do not allow you to create those kind of antics in the streets. You have no right to stop people who are out trying to engage in commerce, whether that's on the sidewalk or whether that's out in the street. You cannot deny people their rights. This is why you can be arrested. And they will arrest you if you're not doing what they want to do, if what you're supporting is antithetical to their agenda. So the next type of warfare is airborne warfare. And obviously chemtrails, you know, geoengineering is a huge part of that. Another part of this airborne warfare is the fact that we have now instruments in space, as well as other types of instruments monitoring us and collecting information, data, or even attacking us, such as dew weapons and so forth. But that's, you know, things that are hitting us from space. And those chemicals, that's happening every day. So that's a huge onslaught in the chemtrails. The fact that they're doing this, you know, there's nowhere in the Constitution where they even have the ability to regulate the air or regulate flights. If you understand the fact that that has never been enumerated, they just assumed and created the FCC. Oh, well, you know, that's crazy that they can't do that. Well, honestly, no, it's not. as they sold the Constitution, it had to be, it has to be enumerated for them to legitimately do it. The next type of warfare is attrition warfare. Now, attrition warfare is where they basically start taking away your ability to do things so that you become vulnerable and dependent. A good way of doing that is basically creating laws that make it impossible for you to do your job. Forestry, they ban your ability to collect and cut down trees. Or mining, that you can't mine because it pollutes the environment. Or producing food, saying, well, you can't produce that type of food by using subsidies. That is all a part of a trick. See, in some way, some of these tactics actually fall under different forms of warfare. And I'll give you a case in point, because I just talked about food. When farmers receive subsidies, that creates warfare against the people, but it also creates economic warfare against the state. So, in other words, you have attrition warfare being deployed by these subsidies to farmers and subsidies to other companies to not produce, so that we become, one, dependent on foreign sources, foreign food, and so forth. Or shifting that focus away from the good, honest people that are growing good food, and then shifting it over to the evil people that are actually creating subsidies, or not subsidies, but substitutes, you know, instead of meat, you know, either lab-grown meat or cricket meat or what have you. In other words, this is a way they manipulate the conditions so that they're actually creating this. This attrition warfare actually has negative impacts economically and in all sorts of other ways. As I'll give you another case in point, because we'll get to this in economic warfare. When the federal government is throwing money into a farmer's pocket, that farmer is not working to produce anything and taking something to market. If he's not taking something to market, how does the state make money off of that zero product? The zero production, how does the state make money? So this is a way that the federal government can actually hurt the states, where the farmer, there's no harm to the farmer, but it's very harmful to your government, the government that needs to function as well. And so people go, well, shoot, look at our government. Well, they are doing, your state government is doing so many things that they have no right to do. And that's one of the reasons why they're increasing their taxation on you as well. I mean, everywhere we turn, they want to tax everything because they want to control everything. And for them to successfully control everything, they're going to have to tax you. We might as well just basically move straight into statism, where they basically say, okay, well, if we need more people to get work and we need more productivity because, you know, we're having to spend more money. And it's really sad, because when we look at these institutions and organizations like the union and these globalist corporations, the reason why they don't care, because they're going to unemploy lots of people when we finally get there. What they really are going to do is they're going to kill lots of people because there's too many people. At least that's what they do. As every time we look at, you know, a problem and government comes up with a solution and the globalists are coming up with these solutions of birth control and these other things, it actually has an adverse effect. And let's look at China real quick, because I've only got maybe 30 seconds here. But really quick, when we look at China and we look at its population control and not allowing to have one baby, they're now reaping the consequences of that, because they really have a shortage in productivity, because there's not enough workers right now to actually support the aging masses. They say within the next 10 years, they're going to have a real problem. And this is one of the reasons why. This is one of the reasons why they're looking to try to replace us, so that they can actually use us and the rest of the world to basically give them the labor that they need, because they didn't allow themselves to procreate. But now they are, and so as they've recognized the consequences of that, they've made some changes, but they can never get things right, because Government Always Fails. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Statism always fails. As we were going into the break, I just ran out of time, but when you look at Russia and the, you know, its form of statism, it's controlling the production and every, as well as the consumption. I mean, that's why they had bread lines. That's why not everybody could have a car. And as a matter of fact, even China's failing, but China is so big and so closed and so hard to get the truth out of China. There's people, there's 300 million, at least last time I heard, that they have in gulags that are basically being used for, you know, live organ harvesting. That's how evil and what they're doing. You don't get away with that level of control without really hurting the people. And in other words, there's 300 million. How many people in America are there? Now, when we talk about legitimate people in America and we remove or don't count the invaders, based on our math, I believe, because we got about 50 million invaders in America, don't listen to what they're saying. As a matter of fact, in our petition, in our invasion petition, we provided a reference to the Yale MIT survey of 2018. They claim to say that there were 21 million invaders then. Now, I'm here to tell you that their numbers were soft because they happened to be progressive institutions. They didn't want you to really know what the real number was, and I'm going to say it was probably somewhere between 30 to 40 million. And if that's the case, then we easily have 50 million by the time Trump, the 2020 election, or at least by today. So if we take 50 million off of the 300, let's say 30 million, supposedly there are living in America, we don't even hit 300 million. Now, why am I bringing up these numbers? Because we're talking about the people that are incarcerated in China is equivalent to the population of America. Oh, well, they can't take us. They can't, you know, control us. They're already controlling that level of that number of people for live organ harvesting. And the only way those people can be saved is by external forces. Now, going back to really what I was saying earlier, because I talked about, you know, China and the UN working together, folks, our only hope is to start instilling hope with those people who have no hope. Give them hope to take a stand. Create another Tiananmen Square, but this time America will answer. This time, instead of America having to answer, and as a matter of fact, the best thing to do is to literally put China on its heels by getting Hong Kong, by getting Taiwan and other provinces and other places for people to take a stand and say, we would rather become a state in the United States and go into territory status for the next several decades until we get there, but we would rather have a path into America to be a part of the Union than we would being controlled by China and its evil empire. Ah, that right there gives people hope. because now we can start going in and actually start creating these territories, as well as starting to preserve and pushing back on what we would call China's colonization of the world, or communism's colonization of the world. We have to change. I talked about this during my presidential, constitutional president series, which was between March 11th and March 27th, if you want to go listen to that. But the fact is, we shouldn't be colonizing. We should be welcoming states, free sovereign states, to be secured in this union, so that the people will have justice and the people will have, you know, the freedom and sovereignty to live their lives and make their own choices. Living under the rule of law, when I say the rule of law, not the law of tyranny, but the law that preserves life and private property. Anyway, let me get back to the different warfare tactics. We covered rebellions, airborne, attrition, biological. We've already been hit with the pandemic, and we've actually been hit a few times, because I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced at all that the pandemic was the first time we actually had globalists play with us, because I believe that SARS actually hit America, because as I thought about it, and having been hit by COVID, because I should have been really knocked out, back, I want to say it was 2009, 2010. I got hit really hard with a flu that the symptoms were more like COVID or more like SARS than they were the flu. But I mean, it really knocked me out. And so that right there, and when I got hit with COVID, it was almost like, you know, just a cold revisited. What ended up happening was that's when I lost my smell and taste. Pretty much that was the really only consequence, because I barely even got a fever from what I had been hit with. So who knows? I was never tested. I don't know. But I'm not convinced that this COVID-19 was the first real global run on a biological warfare. I believe they've been playing with this, and I believe this goes all the way back to probably when we look at Rockefeller taking over pharmaceutical and going down that path. I think that's when they started playing with, you know, the Spanish flu, the flu that killed lots of people in San Francisco and throughout the United States in the early 1900s. There's probably more merit in understanding that those things were probably not globally manipulated, but there were bad players that were making these things happen. And so if that's the case, then this really spells to this whole point that if this is more of a conspiracy. The fact is, we have the ability to keep these things from actually, you know, hitting us. The fact that we have governments going down the path of doing all this experimentation and so forth. In one hand, they say, oh, we need to do this. But actually, in the other hand, if they didn't do it, what is the chance of it even getting out? Some of these super flus that they've actually, the super viruses that would make the world extinct of all life. So bottom line is, biological warfare has been in play for a long time. We've already seen how it had basically wreaked havoc in America, because our government started reacting to something that they should never have reacted to, because they didn't have the authority. Chemical warfare, obviously, is another type of warfare tactic, where it can be drug trafficking across the southern border. It can be the geoengineering. But see how different warfare tactics can be folded in by airborne and chemical warfare. Cyber warfare, obviously, is a new age warfare, where our voting systems have been compromised and they've been able to seize control and manipulate. We've seen this happen. Social media, NSA spying, big tech spying. You hear me going on all the time about that. Or artificial intelligence, where they're going in and censoring, falsifying documents and so forth. Folks, the fact that they're exercising these types of tactics, and I'm only going to just recap really quick, rebellion, airborne, attrition, biological, chemical, and cyber, if these things were happening, if the U.S. government was playing in any other nation in the world, that nation would consider that an act of war. Why are states not looking at what the federal government is doing as an act of war? Why is it that there's not one legislative body in America that is not taking a stand saying we are in a constitutional crisis because our own government is taking action to cause harm in a plethora of ways? Because, and more importantly, they don't have the authority to execute these warfare tactics. So now let me dive into economic warfare. Economic warfare, there's probably, you know, I got six listed here, but there's probably a lot more, and I think I've covered some of these. Federal ownership of land. When they actually start coming in and taking land away from the states being able to use it for productivity, they're basically sitting on land, and then they're even selling it so that they can amass wealth. We've already talked about how the federal government is limited to very specific types of land. And when they take land from the state for forest, wetlands, conservation, environment, whatever the hyped up claim is, they don't have the authority. But they're doing it, and they're amassing, like the Catholic Church, you know, the world or the United States is being leveraged. As a matter of fact, I've even heard idiot lawyers come out and say, every state in the union is U.S. land. No, it's not. It's not land that the federal government controls. Another way of playing economic warfare, haven't hit this probably, inflating our currency. I haven't mentioned that recently, but inflating our currency is a way of waging warfare. This is how they steal the wealth from people. Allowing foreigners to purchase any land, resource, or asset, selling us outright. Regulating commerce within the states instead of among the states. When they come in and say, hey, you can't produce those foods. You can't produce toilets to flush that much water. You can't produce those types of light bulbs. They have no authority to do that. And they're doing it. How is that not economic warfare? Cultural warfare. This is all a part of this globalist engineering. Federal subsidies, we've already talked about, how they actually go in and they stop manufacturing the production of food, and or they even promote certain productions like Elon Musk with the EV. Tesla would not be a blip on our radar had they not provided all the subsidies to them. And, you know, you go out and buy that car, you pay less, but Tesla still makes the same amount of money because the government gives them that money. And they're still using these subsidies. They're still spending money on electronic vehicles, getting employers to create charging stations, giving them credit. Who pays for all this credit? The government does. In other words, they're throwing your tax dollars, making Elon Musk rich. This is all a collusive conspiracy. I hate to say it, folks, but there's no other way of saying it. When we look at how much they have done and how much there's no control. There's no off switch. They are just out of control, throwing money to actually hurt us more and more and to ingratiate other people. Don't think Elon Musk is your friend. Elon Musk is doing everything he can to physically harm you, as well as basically building his masses. And when people look at what he's doing with Twitter, so what? That is nothing. As a matter of fact, what he is doing is he's playing the game so that he can be in a position of control. Anyway, this last one I'll bring up for economic warfare is not having gold and silver-backed currency, because that would eliminate, had we followed the Constitution, that would have eliminated their ability to inflate our currency, would have eliminated their ability to spend and so forth. So economic warfare is a huge warfare tactic. And if we were playing this game in any other nation out there, then that nation would cry foul. and say these are acts of war, and they'd start lobbing missiles at us. So let me dive into a few more different warfare tactics before we get back into cultural. There's electronic warfare tactics. This is the implementation of 5G, using 5G transmissions and 5G phones that they're actually allowing to be sold so that it can be in your presence, so you can be bombarded with EMF. Or how about this electronic warfare with DEWs, direct energy weapons, where they've burnt land like in Hawaii? What about information option or operations and warfare? Misinformation, propaganda, and using those types of things to basically extort and manipulate outcomes to get very specific outcomes. Proxy wars. Now, what is the proxy war? Instead of the government actually waging warfare, they actually allow and support non-government organizations, or better yet, businesses, to create laws by attacking our rights and forcing us to do things that are spying on us, with Amazon, with Walmart, with all of these big tech companies. They're using proxy war in actually exploiting and prosecuting us, because they're basically manipulating us in so many different ways. What is an NGO? Non-government organization. In other words, these typically, what do they call those? Non-taxable 501c3s, those types of things. Those are non-government organizations. The PACs are non-government organizations. And when we look at all of the different NGOs as well as corporations and businesses and how they're creating regulations, they're actually creating laws where you don't have these rights, where your Fourth Amendment right is, you're no longer secure in your person. We got problems, folks, because no state can enforce or create any law that abridges your privileges or immunities as a U.S. citizen. And so when they allow corporations to behave that way in your state, then they're allowing that enforcement. Do you understand? They cannot make or enforce any law that abridges your privileges and immunities. Psychological warfare. The national education system is the epitome of that. Subterranean warfare is where they take away your mineral or water rights. And they've been doing that. And they're doing that left and right. So this brings me back in full fold to this cultural warfare, right? So when we look at cultural warfare, we kind of covered how the education system was probably one of the biggest players in all of this, right? And so when we look at all these different types of cultural engineering that's a part of the cultural warfare, we look at the education, we look at the invasion, and we look at the refugees, because that's what we covered in the past. That's what we covered on Friday. And so we covered how those things had really created what I'll just say a huge impact and a huge shift in America, where we're no longer actually acting what we and doing what we should be doing. We're really responding in ways to, you know, the way they want us to. It's almost like they've got us wired to get us to actually make ourselves more vulnerable in the way we respond. If you've ever seen anybody that is so controlled by their emotions that they just respond and respond and respond, this is how you can exploit them. Because you know, if you do a certain thing that gets them riled up, that's how you pull their strings, then they will respond a certain way and you can exploit that. They are at such a high level of understanding how to manipulate the masses that they're getting away with murder. So, when we look at this cultural engineering, the byproduct, what is really killing us, you hear me say this the most, this is probably the biggest impact, is our illiteracy. Because we do not understand these fundamental rights. We do not understand what these laws mean. We do not understand the Constitution, even in a basic form. We are so illiterate. And this is why this show is focused on providing you the content so that you understand the Constitution as the framers defined it, not as the judges and some professors have manipulated and massaged those words to mean something different. As a matter of fact, those redefining of the Constitution, those folks that do that, they're absolutely running an insurrection against the Constitution. When you're actually taking something that was defined a very specific way and saying it doesn't mean that anymore, this is what it means, then that is an insurrection of the Constitution. And how dare the illiterate people stand up and say it doesn't mean that, unless you can place real context to it and say, no. For, Mr. Iredell in North Carolina stated it this way. George Nicholas in Virginia stated it this way. James Wilson in Pennsylvania stated it this way, and on, so that you can actually prove that that's how that line was defined. Instead of, this is how we define it now, because that is how they're getting away with murder. The inflation is another sad story. And as a matter of fact, that right there, in fixing this, the antidote is going to be a bitter one, but it will not kill us, because we have the resources and the ability to survive this. But we actually have to become a compassionate nation again. We need to really start saying that we have to love one another. We have to take care of one another. We can get through this. This is where we unite as a nation. We unite on the Constitution, and we unite in our resolve of standing up and casting off this globalism that has been basically soaking us for years. For over a century, we've been soaking in global communism. The increase of disease and decrease, the exponential decrease in housing has really created problems. I mean, it's a real problem when educated young people that are coming in, and they're still illiterate, but they're coming into the workforce to become employees, and they're capable of earning and working and making money. Those folks that are actually engaged in, moving into the corporate ladder or what have you, they can't afford to buy a house. And I think it's an indictment when you see that they're actually selling these little teeny plots of land and a little, house to go on it, the minimalist look. And people are paying an arm and a leg for that. And when you really think about it, what's the difference other than the cost? What is the difference? Because you're buying a home that has very small footprint, very small piece of land, and you're buying this home when you're paying the amount of money per square foot, and you compare that to a standard home, an old home that maybe needs repair or what have you, and you may pay more for it. Yeah, you may pay more for it, but you're almost paying the same thing per square foot, and you've got more land with that as well. So what I'm saying is, when you look at the acreage, let's say you've got 400 square feet of land, and on that you have maybe 100 square feet of a building, or the small little minimalist building, and so you've got this little teeny plot, and you've got this little teeny house, and you're still paying, let's say, $70 a square foot. You could easily find a house on 1 acre, a half an acre of land, and have, a much larger home for about $70 a square foot. But yeah, you're going to pay twice, three times more for that. But still, you're getting something. You're getting a lot more. Now you have enough property where you can actually grow you have a victory garden and feed yourself. You can do more with more. But these kids have been beaten down, and they've just surrendered to the idea that I'll take what you give me and I'll do without. But if I can't have it, I'll do without. And I'm going, oh my gosh, we are defeated. Because when you look at that type of attitude, that is a defeated attitude. Another byproduct, and the final byproduct I'll mention, is the increase in violence and the increase in terrorism in America. And when I say terrorism, I'm not talking about Mohammedans running around, you know, Allah Akbar or anything like that. I am actually saying that we actually are waging a level of scorched earth mentality with each other to the level the violence is unacceptable. And the way we wage it is terroristic. In other words, it is in a purpose of causing fear. When we look at what they do in the streets with protests, that is terrorism. It's causing fear. We have a right to be able to be free to conduct commerce. When people are violating that right, the rule of law says they must be arrested. But we're not arresting them. We're actually arresting the law-abiding citizens that don't do that kind of crap and actually get out there and just say, hey, we got to join together and fight back. Well, they're not going to let you have that message anymore. But you can, and you still have the right to petition your public servants. By doing so, you're no longer out in the streets so they can ignore you. You need to get in their face, and you need to create a public relations campaign in proving to the people in your community, in your district, and in your county, prove to the people that these people do not deserve your vote, that we need to find somebody else now. That's why the strategy must be, as soon as this election is over, you need to have honest conversations with the people in your community to say, we realize that this person is not going to represent us. And we can't wait until the next election, because that's why we keep on getting defeated. This goes back to what I was saying earlier. When you're talking to a group of leaders, we can't take and use the game strategy that they gave us by, you know, starting a campaign at the beginning of the filing. By that time, it's too late. They have stacked the deck so that the incumbents can continually win. Why do you think primaries are so short, which the primary is really where your biggest challenge is? Because whoever wins the primary, 9 times out of 10, wins the general. So when you have these primaries in April, May timeframe, and then you got this long span of time to wait, it's just a waste of time. You have to have a long primary so that you can really beat it out and duke it out. You know, we see this primary process when we look at the presidential election. And bottom line, we're not even supposed to have a presidential election. We're supposed to have an electoral election. We're supposed to choose our electors. But folks, with that, when we come back, I want to talk more about what we need to do and how you need to start creating a movement. And that's what we'll talk about on Friday in a part of our Feedback Friday. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.